Welcome to our latest episode of the Lebanese Physicians Podcast. And today we will be talking about the impact of the Lebanese economic crisis and health crisis on preventative care in Lebanon with a focus on hypertension and diabetes. And today this episode is co-hosted with Dr. Muhammad Ali Jardali again. And our guests are Dr. Aniela Abijurjis, who's an associate professor at the Lebanese American University School of Medicine and has a PhD in cellular and molecular biology and has a focus on cardiac physiology. And she is also involved in education at the university and in the medical ethics part of the medical school. And our second guest is Miriam Bouyeri, who is currently a fourth-year medical student at the Lebanese American University. And we were happy to learn today that she's in the fourth year of medical school and she already has 12 publications. And pretty soon she will be moving to the U.S., to Duke University for a postdoctoral position. Welcome, Miriam, and welcome, Dr. Abijurjis.
Thank you. Thank you very much for hosting us today.
And welcome, Muhammad Ali, again.
It's good to be back. I'm super excited to talk about their paper.
And just the wonders of Zoom, I guess. We're like sitting here in probably a couple of different time zones. I'm in the U.S., Muhammad Ali is in Saudi Arabia, and Aniela and Miriam are in Lebanon right now. So it's interesting. So we talked about the background. I think the reason we are talking about this is because you guys just published recently an article on the impact of the Lebanese economic and healthcare crisis on access to diabetes and hypertensive care in Lebanon. So I'm just going to start with the background first, if you guys can tell us briefly, because everybody knows about it, but some people probably don't who are listening. So just the background about when the economic crisis started in Lebanon and how it has affected the healthcare sector. Maybe Dr. Abijurjis?
Yes. So it all started at the end of 2019. And actually, unfortunately, the Lebanese people had to face a multifaceted crisis. So there were major contributing factors to this crisis, like the political instability, the financial depression, the COVID-19 pandemic, as well as the blast of the Beirut explosion that occurred on August 4, 2020. So all of these factors together, they created this crisis, and we witnessed an inflation rate which reached more than 100% during the first months of 2021. And along with this, we had as well a loss of over 81% of the value of the original value of the Lebanese lira. So all of these together led to this economic crisis and affected the drug shortage in the country, as well as the access to healthcare. So many patients weren't able to have access to their physicians, to their healthcare, and to their drugs. So because of this crisis, now the Ministry of Public Health, they issued some decrees in order to control or to govern the drug import, as well the prices of the drugs. But actually, they weren't. I mean, these decrees weren't up to the amplitude of the crisis. And unfortunately, this crisis affected tremendously the patients with diseases, and mainly those with chronic diseases, including hypertensive patients and diabetic.
I have to admit, I'm a little bit jealous that you wrote this paper, because this is exactly the type of paper I would have loved to write. This is something that we lived on a daily basis. And as a family medicine physician who works with patients with diabetes and hypertension, this is like my bread and butter. And I was witnessing it firsthand when I was still in Lebanon, how it's affecting patients. So to have researchers go into the field and quantify it and document it for future, and to have lessons learned, because this crisis is not only happening in Lebanon right now, Egypt is having a similar crisis. So different countries will experience that. So to document it, all of it, and have it for the repertoire for the future use, I have to salute you, A, for the idea, and B, for the execution, and to publish the data. So maybe now is a good time to talk about how Maryam and the co-authors, how the idea came about and how you went through the execution.
So this project was actually initiated in the context of a year-long project. So at LAU, Gilbert and Rosemary Chariouli School of Medicine. So it was an initiative that was led by a group of students. So we have Miriam with us today, but there are other students who were involved, and I would like actually to acknowledge them. So we have Elio Isa, Rasha Abdullah, Ali Hamam, Qasim Sbeiti, Anthony Saad. And we have as well two other students who also helped with the data collection, Christine Aoun and Reem Karam. And we have with us Dr. Michelle Sherfin, who helped us with the statistical analysis. So this is a year-long project that started from Med1 to Med2. And I will let Miriam actually talk more about this initiative and share her input.
Thank you, Doctor. So basically, if you want to tell us why we focused on hypertension and diabetes in particular, it's because the majority of the Lebanese patients actually suffer from one of those chronic diseases. And these conditions hit really hard in Lebanon. So in fact, a recent study showed in 2018 that hypertension alone affected 31% of the population. And nearly half of all of those population had diabetes. So when we actually did our study, what we saw is that aside from this, we had a drug shortage also in Lebanon. So we had an economic strain. It was causing like a ripple effect. We were observing a lot of mortality rates, medication errors, hospitalizations. Not to mention that at the same time, our healthcare system was also feeling the squeeze. So we had staff shortages, hospitals were closing, healthcare workers were actually leaving. So what we did is that we did a search, we gathered a lot of data, and it was really clear that we needed targeted policies and interventions to ease this burden on people with these conditions. So our paper was not just about the healthcare outcomes and everything, it was really about making a difference in those people's lives. So that's why we ended up choosing this topic for our year-long project, and we ended up publishing such a paper.
So basically, I think this paper, when I went through it, can you tell us which years it was conducted in and how you were able to reach the participants, and maybe just a bit about the questionnaire that was used to reach those participants?
Yeah, so basically we did a questionnaire which was self-administered, and we did a small pilot study which was approved by the LAU IRB. We drafted like a comprehensive set of 51 questions, which covered various dimensions. We delved into demographics, exploring factors like health insurance, disease history, any health issues of a patient. We also probed into the impact of the economic crisis on the acquisition of the medications. We questioned them on the strategies, how they actually obtained those medications, if they had any alternatives, how were they able to afford it. And we also dwelt into the health-seeking behaviors, like the lifestyle choices, sugar intake, exercise, alcohol consumption, etc. And finally, we also dwelt into the mental health. So we used the scale of the DAS-21, which evaluates the depression, the anxiety, and the stress. And when we combined all of those, we came up with a questionnaire, which we used for an exploratory cross-sectional study. So we relied on a snowball sampling. It covered a span from December 2021 till March 2022, and then again from August 2022 till November 2022. So we gathered the responses from several adults. Most of the responses were due to an online survey, but some of the responses even came in real time. So this approach allowed us to like capture a snapshot of the situation post-lockdown, and it gave us really valuable insights into this critical period where the Lebanese citizens were actually suffering from this economic crisis.
And the questionnaire is very comprehensive. You go into the demographics, but you also, like you mentioned, you go into the health-seeking behaviors, you go into the reasons why they didn't go and seek a treatment with the same physicians. You talked about if they chose alternative medications, transportation. It was very comprehensive. And as a doctor who left Lebanon due to the multiple crises, I was really shocked by the number of respondents who said that they had to change their treatment because the physician left. Actually, it squeezed me a little bit. I felt a little bit guilty. But it surprised me to see. I know like all of my friends left, all of the doctors I know left, but to see it in a published paper, like my shared experience and the shared experience of many Lebanese, it hit home differently.
Unfortunately, it's not the fault of the physician even of leaving the country, because at the end of the day, he actually has a life. He has to also continue his work and everything. So unfortunately, the situation hit both the citizens and also the physicians.
The questionnaire looks like it was conducted between 2021 and 2022. Is that correct?
Yes.
And then it was distributed, I saw, through social media for the most part. So were you able to reach, that's my next question was, were you able to reach respondents across the country, or was it more, did you feel it was more limited to people who have more access to social media and are more prone to be using the internet?
So basically, we tried as much as we can to get data from everywhere. But unfortunately, the majority of our results were from Mount Lebanon. So 46.8% of the participants were from there. We had like 26.3% from Beirut, and the other 26.9% represented other locations. Now, we tried to get in touch with several patients through the snowballing. So whenever I give you, if you give someone, and then etc. But unfortunately, half of the results came from Mount Lebanon.
Okay.
Yeah, but this also could actually point to the fact that there could be changes, regional changes, actually, given the socioeconomic status, as well as the structure, the infrastructure, the access to healthcare, because the studies also showed that the outcome could be different between rural areas and other areas. So it's true that our sample comes mainly from Mount of Lebanon and Beirut, but we have as well a percentage coming from the other regions of Lebanon. And as Miriam mentioned earlier, it's an exploratory study, and it would be always nice to complete it, especially now. Like Muhammad Ali said that he's interested in the study. I think that it would be always nice to look again at the outcome of this crisis now in 2024, because unfortunately, the situation didn't come back to normal. So we still have problems, and we tried to capture really what was going on in a certain period of time. So this is very important when we read our results, and when we want to think about them, to look at them in that particular period of time. Because now if we want to, let's say, repeat the study again, we might not have the same results, because the situation was evolving very fast in Lebanon. So really, and our aim was to capture what was going on in a very specific time frame.
It makes sense. It's a snapshot of one moment in time, in one moment of history. This is very dynamic. Things change on an hour-to-hour basis in Lebanon. You wake up and then an explosion happens and your life is becomes very different. So the situation is dynamic and it changes day to day, but it's still very valuable to get more than 100 patients to share about their experience. And the level of detail that you go to in the questionnaire is very impressive. Do you want to talk a little bit about the results and what you found?
You want to go ahead, Miriam, and then I continue. Okay.
So basically, what we found throughout the study is that half of the participants actually relied on the medications to manage their conditions. And they failed to actually follow up with several doctors. So if you want to talk about it more, unfortunately, despite the majority having a primary physician that they used to follow up with them, due to the economic constraint, they actually hindered the regular visits. So 31.6% of the respondents did not visit a healthcare professional. First of all, it was due to cost, and mainly due to cost, because it was the primary barrier, with 66% of those participants not going. We also had the physician immigration, as we were talking about it, with 32%. And also, what was nice to know is the transportation issue. So many people had a transportation issue to come to the hospital to be able to get treated. And if you want to also dwell more, most of the patients were dissatisfied with the healthcare system. So in our study, it showed that 84.2% of the population were actually not happy about the healthcare system in Lebanon. They were not able to actually access the medication. They had a problem in getting it. So most of them, what they did is that they started searching for other ways to get those medications. So some of them used the stock reserves that they actually had from other years. Some went to generic medications. A majority also went and got their medications abroad from relatives. Other people relied on suppliers, on dispensaries, or even NGOs. So it's very sad to see that the country itself wasn't able to actually offer those medications to those patients who are in need chronically every day to have those medications. So this was really the highlight of our results section. And it showed how important it is to highlight the fact that these challenges were really hard and were really faced by many people. And it actually caused a lot of negative feedback on their health, probably not on a short term, but even on a long term effect. And I guess Dr. Aniela can talk more about other stuff that we also saw from the results section.
Yeah, so we were also interested at looking to the humanistic outcome of the crisis. And that's why we looked at level of stress, the reported level of stress. And as Miriam explained earlier, the DAS, the depression, anxiety, stress scale. And we assessed as well the perception of the patients to their health. So we were interested in looking at their health literacy. If they were aware, what would be the health outcome if they if they're not going to have their regular follow-up with their primary physician, if they're going to change, decrease, or stop their medications without any medical referral, if they would aware, if they are aware about the side effects of a non-hospitalization, because we know that. As we already mentioned, the access to healthcare also was hindered. And actually, we assessed this perception, and on average, the participants were aware about the side effects. So it's as if they, when they were decreasing the dosage of their drugs or changing it, it's like because they didn't have any other choice. Now, there was like a small proportion, of course. I mean, there will always be people who weren't aware or who didn't care about it. So and now regarding the assessment of the mental health, the reported, we asked about the reported level of stress, and actually the level of stress was very high among the participants. And that was attributed to the economic crisis, to the medical shortages, political instability, the blast that occurred on August, the global pandemic, and the inability to access healthcare. So all of them, so we asked them to actually attribute, to mention what were the factors. And then we used the DAS, which is a validated scale, to make sure that the reported level of stress is really valid. And according to this scale, there was an overall increase in anxiety and depression and in stress among all participants, whether they have diabetes alone or hypertension, or whether they have both diseases altogether. And the level of stress was very high. Actually, what was also interesting is that the overall DAS score, so the overall stress scale, was higher in the patients who were suffering from both diseases with respect to those who were suffering with just one of them. And there was a higher proportion of participants with both diseases had extremely severe depression, anxiety, and stress level. So it was clear from the results that these patients, they didn't have only to look for their drugs, to make sure to follow up with their with their physicians. They also struggled with this level of stress on how they have to afford their medications. And interestingly, I just want to mention in correlation with the health literacy, so the fact that they were really aware of the side effects of discontinuing their medication, etc., there was a high percentage of the patients that they were checking all the time as much as they could their glycemia, their blood level, the fasting blood sugar, their blood pressure as well. So they are keen on keeping their health, to follow up on their health. But the situation obliged them, unfortunately, to take some decisions that they're not happy with, most probably.
One of the points I was going to make is that when we said 46.8% were in Mount Lebanon, Mount Lebanon is the more prosperous region in Lebanon. So basically, even though there was a high percentage of people in the more prosperous regions in Lebanon, the results were still very concerning.
Exactly. And if we look at the income levels in the study, it was sad to see that only 34% of the participants, they had an income which was higher than 3 million Lebanese lira, which already lost its value. So the situation was really difficult at that time.
Exactly. And when we talk about lack of access to transportation as a factor of seeking healthcare in Lebanon in general and in Mount Lebanon, it's very significant. Usually that's not an issue in a middle-income country as Lebanon was considered before the crisis, before we got demoted. But it's very significant. This is the context that you wouldn't expect in Lebanon. We were living it and feeling it on a day-to-day basis. But again, to document it and to have patients share their experience. Also, we know a lot of Lebanese people depend on remittances, and the economy in general in Lebanon depends on remittances. But to see that, I think it was like 40%, so half of the participants almost dependent on their relatives to access their medication. This is something very significant. So whenever we want to discuss healthcare, it doesn't exist in a silo by itself. It's part of the bigger social, political, economical system. And you cannot solve the healthcare crisis by itself without addressing everything else in the bigger context. So I think it's very significant. Your findings are very eye-opening.
Yeah, and the thing is that what is worth noting is the role that the Lebanese diaspora also played during this time. So the fact that the people abroad were really helping with providing the drug shortage, you know, relatives living abroad, sending the medications to their families, even helping them with respect to economy.
It was more important, it played a bigger role than NGOs. And that says something. Yani, that figure by itself, when you see on the paper, the percent of people depending on relatives and percent of NGOs, it makes you take a moment and look back and say, wow. Yani.
Yeah, the Lebanese diaspora. And how many Lebanese people were abroad during this period of time? I mean, it's sad, but it had its advantages somehow in a way.
Right, it's more like you're exporting people outside and then getting the money back in that way. This was a snapshot in time between 2021 and 2022. And I think that was the time when the economic crisis was probably at its maybe deepest, we can say. I don't know. But do you think, I know hopefully we can repeat the study now, but do you think if we repeat the results now, would the numbers be better or worse or the same? That's a hard question, but yeah.
It's a very challenging question indeed, because it's true that now in 2024, the Lebanese population adapted somehow to the economic crisis. And there were some changes that took place. Like, for instance, there was like a salary adjustment for some people. Of course, it's not for everyone. Let's talk about the private sector, because the public sector is still struggling with that. But we still have a lot of drugs that are not supported by the central bank. So we still have a lot of non-subsidized medications. And I knew also that 4 days ago, the prices of the generic drugs were increased. And now they are really similar to the brand drugs. So
I think they removed all subsidies 4 days ago, from what I understood.
Exactly. 100%. Exactly. So the generics, even the price of the generics now is very high. So, and this is very recent. So we don't know really how this is going to impact because during the crisis, patients were taking the generics instead of the brands, but now because they were cheaper, but now it's not the case anymore. So maybe the Lebanese population will find another, a new balance, like a balanced system again, like a new strategy to cope with these changes. But it's a challenging question. We really need to assess it closely in order to see. But for sure, now it's better. It's getting better than earlier. The 80% of the drugs are available, but come in, it's on off all the time because the pharmaceutical companies are ordering the drugs. They have them for a shorter period of time, and then there is a shortage again. So it's an on-off, let's say, period now of
And if I can add also that unfortunately we live in a world of uncertainty in Lebanon. So we got used to surprises, if you want. So I guess people, since they already went through this economic crisis, most of the people are now prepared. So they think twice before doing anything because they actually experienced the suffering before. So I guess this would also help a little bit, if not a lot, with the results if we end up reapplying the study again in this current condition, because people got used to it and probably they might now think twice of having extra medications in their house, getting extra suppliers. So it's because they're already living in an era where it's already of uncertain. You don't know if there's going to be anything next in Lebanon, unfortunately.
I think it's very hard to say if it will be better or worse. I'm glad to hear Dr. Aniela. I'm sure just think for some people it's a little bit better. But in like any system, there's winners and losers. And I think the situation in Lebanon is so volatile. I think we haven't even talked that there's a war going on in parts of Lebanon right now that any second might turn into a full-scale war and that will change everything for everyone. So it's so volatile, it is impossible to make any predictions, and a lot of people are hurting. And again, the role of the government is non-existent. Like in your paper, you show the role of the MOH is maybe even less than NGOs and less than the diaspora. So when we're talking about policies, it's great, but if the policy is only going to address that 10 or 15%, what about the other 80 to 90%? Like, what are we doing for them? It is not fair to have the burden of responsibility fall on the diaspora. Something needs to be said about how the diaspora is a major lifeline, and the entire country depends on them. And without them, people will hurt even more. This is what really surprised me, was the role of the diaspora was more than the role of MOH and NGOs combined. I
Yeah,
don't know.
it probably continue to be. And I think what would be interesting, I don't know if we've looked into, let's say, with people not having access to diabetes or hypertension medications, have we looked into are the rates of stroke or heart attacks or other secondary diseases from this, have they increased or not? I don't know if we've looked into that. I know it's hard to look at this data.
And no, we didn't. We didn't go that far, but for sure, this is very interesting to see. I mean, to see the medical outcome, especially for those who didn't afford the medication or decrease the dosage or didn't have a proper follow-up. Of course, that would be really interesting to look at. But in this study, we didn't get the chance to look at this aspect.
And even in your study, you showed how a lot of patients shifted from the private sector to the public sectors to NGO. There's a lot of fragmentation to just to be able to follow up a patient. We don't have a unified medical record number in Lebanon. So to be able to follow a patient from the private to the public to the NGO sector, it's a nightmare. I don't even know like where you would start.
Of course, of course. I mean, fragmented care is something scary. That's for sure. And in addition to that, I wanted to say, and we mentioned it earlier, but I want to stress on it as well, is that in addition to the immigration of the physicians, there was also immigration of the nurses, the nursing staff. And the hospitals were also suffering because the shortage didn't affect only the drugs as in the medications. And for the physicians who decided to stay in Lebanon, Some of them were obliged also to travel, to spend like some weeks, a month abroad, you know, because as we said, they're also human beings and they have families and at the end of the day. So let's say that my physician is still in Lebanon, but is not available all the time. Also, this was problematic to the patients. This could also add a certain level of stress to them if they need their physician, the physician isn't in the country, although they know that their physician will be back soon. So all of this together really was a chaotic environment for the patients. And we really wanted to shed light on them because they are a vulnerable population. And of course, there are other patients suffering with other diseases as well. In parallel to our study, of course, I mean, we had the cancer patients who are struggling. That was also another dramatic, I would say, even more dramatic story. But these patients are really suffering. And we believe that, we hope at least, that our results would provide a certain information for a policy making, because we'd want to have an informed policy making decision. So not any decision to be made, but based on the needs of the patients who are struggling and suffering every day.
Right, because I mean, data is very important to change policy, and collection of data is probably the most important thing to one, instruct what policies need to be made and then how the policies need to be implemented afterwards. So just to end on a more positive note, I think with
I try to be positive. Yeah. Muhammad Ali wasn't. So.
I was going to ask actually Miriam and you actually, which is great. I think there's still very good medical schools in Lebanon, very good students who are actually, and now I think the match was this week, and I think a lot of students from both LAU and AUB and other universities were able to match in very good programs and have very good postdoc positions too. But also one of the things I think that impressed me with the medical school, which I didn't know about, was the year-long project, which, Miriam, can you tell us a bit about it? Like, it's like a student-led project, right? This is what led to this, I guess.
Yes, and it was also mentored by Dr. Deep, which we give a big thanks to her. It's a really nice project that we get throughout the whole year. So we end up choosing a topic of our choice. And then with our mentor, we constantly follow up on the specific project. And the really nice thing about it is that we get into research a lot. So we learn about research from the basic till the end of publishing a paper. So this is a really plus for the students at LAU and of course other universities that use also this year-long project. Because you get to work as a team, work with several students on a project that you tend to choose. And at the same time, you get to learn about research. And as Dr. Aniela was mentioning before, research is a really important aspect of the medical field. So being a doctor is really nice, but also focusing on the way of improving every aspect of the medical field through research is also way more important. So we really want to thank LAU for providing us this opportunity of learning the basics of research, of guiding us throughout our medical years, and of providing opportunities for each one of us to excel later on in the future and improving several skills throughout this project.
Yeah, I mean, thanks to you both and to Muhammad Ali for being on this podcast. And I think one of the things, just to end it with, is like the student-led year-long project was pretty important, actually, because it was able to highlight some important data that hopefully will be used to implement policy in the future. And maybe you can tell the students who are coming after you, maybe their next project could be the same one, but looking at the same outcomes now in 2023, 2024.
Yes, of course. And not just take these outcomes and work on it. What I would encourage is that to expand even more the search. Probably, unfortunately, at our time, we weren't able to study a lot of outcomes, a lot of factors, because we were limited with some specific topics, and because the situation at that time wasn't that good for us to be able to open up for a lot of things. But what I would encourage is to dwell on all of those things that we already mentioned throughout the podcast to be able to even open up the search and create even a higher, bigger research project, which can even help even further later on, hopefully.
Honestly, and as a Med1 student and Med2 student, you already went above and beyond, honestly. And this is more than what's expected of you. And you didn't do research for the sake of research. Honestly, you did the research that has an impact that we live on a daily basis. And I want to commend you on that, because a lot of times when students are forced to do a research, they choose hayallah topic or do whatever. But you made the effort to do something that really impacts everyone. So I really want to salute you, Yani, for having that wisdom as a Med1 and having the perseverance to contact more than 100 patients and do a 30-minute interview with them and get the data and follow up and publish it. This is a very big feat, and I really want to congratulate you on doing it as a Med1 and Med2. Again, Yani, I can't stress that enough. You just started your medical careers, and I wish you all the best, all of you.
Thank you. And a big thanks goes to our mentor, Dr. Aniela. Without her, we wouldn't be able to be right now here.
It was a pleasure actually working with them, because they were enthusiastic, motivated, and they invested a lot in the project. And it was essential for me to give them this freedom also to pick a topic that that they want to work on. Because if we are not motivated by the project and we're not enthusiastic, then research cannot also evolve. So,
and I think your background is more like molecular and like basic science, right, Dr. Aniela Bijur? So this is something you're probably very new to you as well. So again, it's not easy to mentor something that you're not, it's not your comfort zone, so to speak.
Yeah, but I my research is focused on cardiovascular and specifically diabetes. So the topic is still actually and falls under my my expertise somehow. So yeah.
Yeah. Thanks. Thank you, everyone
involved in this project.
Yeah.
Chapeau bas.
Thank you, everyone. Much. Thank you, Dr. Bajujus, Miriam, and all the medical students who were involved in this project, and biostatistics too, who were involved in it. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And thank you for hosting us.